Welcome back to His Time. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is 7:32 Central Time, and this morning, joining me in studio, the Reverend Michael Meyer from the Office of National Mission. He's the Manager of Disaster Response. Good morning, Reverend Meyer.
Good morning, Andy.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Any disasters planned for today?
Not at the moment.
None planned? Well, that's good. I'm glad you're not planning any disasters. Well, what is what does disaster response do in the Office of National Mission? What do you do as Manager of Disaster Response?
Well, we help coordinate our entire church body's relief efforts in time of disaster. So we'll help to bring capacity and guidance to congregations and districts as they experience a disaster, so after a disaster, but also even before that, in congregational preparedness and the training of volunteers across the United States, what we would call Lutheran Early Response Team members.
Let's talk about that, the training that's available. Have several congregations or districts gone through this? Any idea how many have gone through the training and are equipped for
disasters? Yeah, that's a
disasters?
Very good question. We have a good number of congregations and districts who are actively engaged in the program. I don't have a number as far as how many congregations have received training, but we do have records for roughly 13,000 trained individuals across the United States from just about every district.
What does this training include? What does it prepare you to do? What does it equip you with?
Well, it covers some of the basic training materials in order for an individual or a team to respond in time of disaster. So FEMA has actually looked at our materials and said, yes, this is something that we are okay with, that we can print badges for our trained individual so that they could present that in a disaster area and gain access to it to respond in that particular fashion in an organized and collaborative way. But we cover a lot of other things outside of that as well. We'll cover a theology of mercy. We'll cover a theology of the cross and a theology of glory as it relates to disaster response. We'll talk about simple ways to communicate and listen with those who have experienced a disaster. So really there's a whole host of things that are covered there that really is kind of a neat opportunity for groups within a congregation to experience.
So it covers the, as you said, theology of the cross and mercy and how to care for, how to listen, how to communicate with those who have been through a disaster, so that you can simply be someone to listen and respond.
Yeah, we really stress the importance of listening in times of disaster, that it's more important to let that person talk than it is for you to talk, and really kind of simple tools on how to engage in that kind of a conversation. Sure. Simple conversational techniques such as a tool saying, tell me about, is what we, these three little words is what we kind of bring in front of everybody. Tell me about what happened, rather than asking yes or no questions where there's no opportunity for someone to open up and share what's going on, but we want to ask those open-ended questions so that we can really engage them. And if they're willing and need to talk, and many times victims are or survivors are in need of talking, and it just kind of gives them that opportunity to do that.
And that, I'm sure, opens up the door for speaking the gospel and sharing telling the good news of Jesus.
And that's exactly right. We don't target individuals. We don't target areas in time of disaster, but we want to engage with them, give them some of their physical needs if we're able to provide them. And at the same time, when those doors are open, to share the gospel, to speak with them about that which moth and rust won't destroy, what tornadoes can't take away, that love of God that we have in Jesus Christ, the joy of the resurrection.
Sure. It's a balm of healing that's totally different than, anything you would get in the hospital or in another situation where your medical care and caring for the earthly physical needs certainly is important, but that gospel care is certainly important as well in those times.
Yeah, we reference that as body soul care. Mm-hmm. That as Christians and as Lutherans in particular, we have, I think, a unique understanding of this, that we are both body and soul at the same time. They can't be divorced from each other, except at, you know, death. Mm-hmm. When they are separated. But at the same time, we look forward to that resurrection when they're going to be reunited. There's a greater meaning. There's a greater understanding. And so we care for both body and soul in everything that we do.
In addition to the listening and understanding theology of the cross and mercy, what else are the participants equipped with in this training?
They're given simple a simple framework for what a disaster response team might look like in their congregation, the tools on how to collaborate within their circuit, mm-hmm. To invite other congregations to this particular training event, and how they might best respond. We also give resources like items that could go into an equipment trailer. So just kind of a simple list with the items that could go in there for them to respond quickly and effectively. We also give simple congregational... Mm-hmm. Trying to think of the best word to use for this. It's almost like a congregational project. So ideas that a congregation uh-huh. can engage in, that even if a disaster doesn't happen in their backyard, how could they respond to something that's happening 500 miles away? What are the best ways to respond for that? Are there ways that we could put together flood buckets so that we could have little 5-gallon buckets filled with some devotional materials and cleaning supplies that could be stored at the congregation as kind of an evangelism project and uh-huh. handed out to shut-ins or to other individuals who may be adversely affected. The same thing with kind of what we would call survival kits, those basic needs that you might have 12, 24, 36 hours after a disaster strikes, that if the power goes off, mm-hmm. so there's flashlights, uh-huh. there's batteries, there's little meal packets, these kind of things that we provide, we don't provide those materials, but we provide the resources, the framework, kind of instructions plans, for a better, lack of a better word,
sure.
on how a congregation could engage in a project like that and engage their community at the same time.
What a great idea to put together kits like that, to be ready to have them ready to act when something like, you know, when a disaster occurs, whether it's 30 miles away or 500 miles away, as you said.
Yeah, there's really kind of a neat story, especially with the flood buckets. After Hurricane Sandy in New York, mm-hmm. There was a call for flood buckets, but not a whole lot of congregations had them. But one congregation down in Texas did. They had a couple thousand flood buckets, and they ended up driving a U-Haul truck from near Dallas, Texas, all the way up to New York, and the gentleman then flew home. But they provided a couple thousand flood buckets, and the city of New York was actually asking the church for these flood buckets, and we were able to put devotional materials in them, and in the end, it allowed for us to engage the community at a greater level than we would have had we not had those resources available.
In the last few years, the LCMS really has taken, I think we've taken very seriously our the opportunity to respond in disasters with mercy. Has you mentioned that you know New York was asking for assistance and support? Have we seen the government and other agencies looking to the LCMS for either for guidance or for support in disasters?
Yeah, we've seen that some domestically, mm-hmm. But for the most part, when we receive requests like that and guidance from government or secular organizations, at least in my experience over the last year here, it's been internationally. Mm-hmm. That internationally, LCMS disaster response is of the highest quality. Mm-hmm. And so governments in Japan or Australia or even China, frankly, when there's very little opening for the proclamation of the gospel in China, where these governments have contacted our department and said, you know what the model that we have in place of responding when a disaster strikes is a good one. And it's effective, and a lot of these other governments mm-hmm. have seen that, and have desired for us to present at conferences. We just had our former director of disaster response, Reverend Glenn Merritt. He's retiring here in a couple of days, officially, I think. He just spent about a week and a half in Australia because he was invited to a government conference there, and they wanted to understand how a church, how a nonprofit organization, a non-governmental organization, can respond in time of disaster and what the relationship might look like between them and the government. Now, we don't receive any money from the government, mm-hmm. so we're not beholden to them on what we can say or do or sure. anything like that. That would be a compromise, we feel. But we're able to come into this situation like that with a fresh understanding, a fresh mind, and really lay down a framework that has been well received across the entire world.
And there are lots of agencies that respond to disasters. What's unique about the LCMS disaster response?
Well, two things that are unique to LCMS disaster response. The first thing is our understanding of why disasters happen, mm-hmm. our theological basis for it. And the sure. second thing is the length of time that we're there engaging our congregations. A lot of other church bodies, they will work as the name of their church body, mm-hmm. or Samaritan's Purse, or United Methodist, or Baptist. But when we go, we partner with the local congregations because we know that when we're gone, or when all of these other groups are gone, the Red Cross is gone, the Salvation Army is gone, that congregation is there remaining. Mm-hmm. And if something happens in Pilger, Nebraska, we're able to, and our desire is to connect that community to the altar and the pulpit there in Pilger. It doesn't do them any good to be connected to an altar and a pulpit here in St. Louis.
Sure.
So we want them connected to that local congregation, because when all these other groups are gone, and they will leave, Red Cross leaves sometimes after just a couple of weeks, but the congregation is there. And so if we're able to provide them capacity and build them up, hold up their arms and their hands as they proclaim the gospel to their community, which they know,
sure.
then that's what we ought to do.
So that the congregation sees this, so that the community sees this congregation as a station of mercy, as a place of mercy.
A mercy center, that outreach of mercy, Christ's hands in that very community. Not from St. Louis, mm-hmm. not from any other place, but that congregation in that community, their neighbors.
Sure. Helping them solve the situation locally. You know, providing support to help them do that, but not trying to go in and solve the problem for them and then leave, but help them be those agents of mercy right there in that community.
Exactly. I couldn't say it better.
We are talking with the Reverend Michael Meyer, his manager of disaster response here at the Office of National Mission in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that, we'll continue talking about disaster response with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod right here on listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
This is Craig D'Onofrio, Program Director of Worldwide KFUO, with some news for you. On July 7th, Faith and Family will be moving to 10 a.m. The Bible Study, with a new name and new host, will be moving to 11. In August, we're excited to have Pastor William Whedon join the lineup. This new Bible Study program will be called Thy Strong Word. New times, even better radio than ever before. Faith and Family at 10, Thy Strong Word at 11 on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
My name is Rebecca. After fleeing Sudan and spending years in a refugee camp, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service placed me with a foster family in the U.S. I couldn't have survived without a home, friends, and community to embrace me. Every refugee needs help on their journey. Nobody can do it on their own. For 75 years, LIRS has transformed over 500,000 lives through ministries of mercy and justice. Go to lirs.org/KIT to join us and work with refugees like me to brighter tomorrows.
I'm Missouri State Treasurer Clint Zweifel, and I might have something that belongs to you. Did you know that 1 in 10 Missourians has unclaimed property? I hold $800 million for Missouri citizens. It's easy to claim this property online at showmemoney.com, and you can even donate your property to charities doing great work for all of us. To search for your name, visit showmemoney.com today.
This message brought to you by the Unclaimed Property Division of Missouri State Treasurer Clint Zweifel.
Listening to Worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth across the room to a speaker system in your home or listen on radios that have built-in smartphone cradles. There are many easy ways to listen to worldwidekfuo.org on the air, online, and on demand. We proclaim the clear gospel message of Christ crucified for our sins. The messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Welcome back to His Time. I'm your host, Andy Bates. We are talking with the Reverend Michael Meyer. He's manager of disaster response in the Office of National Mission here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Before we went to break, we were talking about disaster response training and how the disaster response work of the LCMS serves people all over the world, not just here in the U.S., but around the world. And the disaster response training that congregations can go through can really help equip them to be a part of that, to be those agents of mercy right there in their community. How can our listeners find out more about this disaster response training?
Well, there's two really good ways to find out more. I mean, there's more ways than that, but there's two really good ways. One is going to our website, lcms.org/disaster. Mm-hmm. And if you click on the resource tabs, there's going to be a document that can be downloaded. It's called Lutheran Early Response Team Training. And that's a flyer about what it takes for a congregation, what are the steps that they need to take in order to schedule one of these trainings and what it might look like in their congregation. The second way would be simply to email us at a very simple email address, disaster@lcms.org, and then we'll answer any questions that you might have, and we can attach that particular flyer and other information as well for any interested parties and congregations.
The training, the Lutheran Early Response training, is any idea typically how long that might take? Is it a one-day workshop or a series of workshops?
It's a one-day workshop, so while the long-term dedication doesn't have to be great, certainly the dedication of that particular day, we normally schedule those on a Saturday, and it might run anywhere between 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's a long day, but it is only one day.
Sure.
It's not scattered over the course of 3 weeks, and so it's a very simple, straightforward process.
And a valuable investment, as it can really affect many. You know, one day can equip you to serve for weeks, months, years ahead.
Yeah, and so many congregations haven't even had these conversations as far as what would happen if water came in, and where are our church records? Are they being held safely in a secure area that's free and of the chances of water coming in and destroying them? Or what would we do if we lost our church building?
Sure.
Or the use of our church building? Maybe it's still there, but we're not able to use it like we should. What is that backup plan? And most congregations haven't had these conversations, and Lord willing, most will never have to be in a position to use their backup plan, but it's not a bad idea to have one, to have those conversations.
Speaking of losing a church building, I know that the congregation in Pilgrim, Nebraska recently lost their church building and their parsonage with the recent tornadoes. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, just this last week, we were there. We got there on Wednesday afternoon, and we stayed until Friday morning and met with the pastor there and a few of his members there in Pilgrim, Nebraska. And the devastation there is, it's mind-blowing. You drive in, and you know, this is a small town, Nebraska. We were able to get in pretty easily in talking with the people at the checkpoint, and we went to the center where they were registering some volunteers. But then we made the drive through the town, and as we were there with the district president, President Sommerfeld, he had been there a number of times, and he was explaining to us in the car as we were driving in how he didn't recognize the town because so much of it was gone. And really in piles compared to what it was before. And we go to the far edge of the town where the church building once was, and all that's remaining is the bell tower. a small little bell tower that was built probably only 12 or 15 feet tall, but that used to be right next to the church building, right next to the parsonage, and all of the rest of that was gone. Wow. We drove into the parking lot and we got out, and next thing you know, we're standing on the concrete slab where the sanctuary once was and the fellowship hall. You could look down and you could see the games. You know, I don't know the name of that game that they put. They painted on the floor.
Shuffleboard.
I think that's what it was. I'm not real good at those remembering those kind of games. But they had a shuffleboard. Paint and sure. Layout on the floor, and so I knew that was the fellowship hall where they would fellowship and do those fun games. But then there were no walls, there was no ceiling, there was nothing else there, a few tiles, and we walked down the aisle of the sanctuary, or where the sanctuary once was, and I was trying to my best to imagine where the pews once were, where the walls were, where the stained glass was, and the altar, and the pulpit, and the font, and trying to picture these things. And it's really difficult to see.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And the congregation there is, they're mourning.
Sure.
The loss of both the sanctuary and the parsonage. The parsonage had a couple of walls standing when we first got there. But by the time we left, those were gone. They had taken the rest of those down, in part for safety reasons.
Mm-hmm. How about in terms of, were there injuries or deaths connected? I know the pastor and his family were okay. They happened to be out of town at the time, I believe.
Yeah, the pastor was with a youth group. They had just driven into Branson, Missouri, I think, for some youth event, and they received the phone call that the tornadoes were coming through. So they essentially turned right around and drove back home. The pastor's wife was in a neighboring community, thanks be to God, and so no one was there at the parsonage when it hit. The rest of the community, there were no reports of death.
Hmm.
But there were a number of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, I take that back. There might have been two deaths. One young boy in the community, and then there was somebody who was driving near the community on a highway, and he was killed. So I think there were actually two deaths. But when you look at the devastation in a town of 400 people, it's not that big, but when mm-hmm. 300 of those people are now homeless and their homes are destroyed, it's an absolute miracle that there were not more casualties as a result of this particular storm.
We just have a couple of minutes left. I want to also talk about South Dakota. I know there were tornadoes there as well, and some of the damage that happened there, and then also what the congregations are able to do since your visit there. What are their plans and how they'll help in the community?
Yeah, so Friday morning, as we were leaving Pilgrim, Nebraska, we had heard that there were tornadoes in South Dakota on Wednesday night. Right as we were pulling into Pilgrim, Nebraska, we heard about these tornadoes that were occurring. And so we kind of made our plans to stop by South Dakota on Friday. On the way back home, because South Dakota is on the way home to Missouri from Nebraska. It was a little out of the way, but it was well worth that extra time to be able to spend that with the serving pastor there mm-hmm. and the members of the congregation there, as they're suffering not a total loss to their church building, but certainly all the windows were gone. They had boarded up the place. I think the whole building had shifted a couple of inches, and so they were going to have to rearrange things with the building and move it in order for it to be back where it was. Now, thankfully, I think there was an individual in the congregation who specializes in moving buildings like that, lifting it up and then placing mm-hmm. it back down on its foundation. So I think they're going to be okay with that. It's just going to take time, though.
How, with just about 2 minutes left, how will these congregations be able to be agents of mercy in their community? What's the plan since your visit there?
Well, the plan, specifically in Pilgrim, Nebraska, since there's no building, there's no parsonage, the plan is to provide some type of temporary shelter,
mm-hmm.
some type of temporary center so that this congregation can be that mercy center within the community. So we were partnering and worked a little bit, coordinated with Orphan Grain Train, mm-hmm. and they had brought in an office trailer. They had brought in already a mobile dormitory to be used mostly for storage on, mm-hmm. in that sense, but the storage of goods and supplies so that they can then hand those out to the community, and the pastor there is providing spiritual care for those within the community. And the same thing with the pastor in South Dakota I believe it was Zion Lutheran Church in Wessington Springs, South Dakota, that he's they're vacant, mm-hmm. but a neighboring pastor was already serving the vacancy, and there so that those the things are in place, the blocks mm-hmm. are in place for them to really proclaim the gospel and provide for people's physical needs at the same time.
What a blessing that we are able to respond as brothers and sisters in Christ, to respond so quickly and to develop a plan, but not just a short-term plan, to be able to follow up and help in the long run too.
Yeah, as the news reports come in, the insurance adjustments come in, you know, when we were there early on, none of that information was there. So we're with them in the long haul. Mm-hmm. We're with them there as long as they need us, as long as that need is there.
To find out more, lcms.org/disaster, correct?
Yes.
You can find out more how they can find out more about the follow-ups, as well as how to support disaster response, find out information on the disaster response training events, all that, lcms.org/disaster. We've been talking with the Reverend Michael Meyer. He's manager of disaster response here at the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in the Office of National Mission. Reverend Meyer, thanks so much for being our guest this morning on His Time.
Thank you, Andy.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll study the daily lectionary. Stick around for more His Time right after this on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.